Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Conversations with Christopher. With world-renowned psychic, spiritual teacher, and healer, Christopher Reburn. Visit Christopher on his website at www.reburn.org to schedule a private reading with him, view tour schedule, his spiritual audio CDs, and much more. Whether you are a spiritual beginner or a spiritual warrior, Conversations with Christopher is geared towards your continued spiritual learning and development. And now, please welcome Christopher Reburn.
Hello, everyone. Thank you for being here today. And we're working on a new audio to shorten that girl down a bit, because that's 53 seconds. It goes on forever. Listen, we're so happy that you could join us today. I tried to find the morning show intro that we used to use, but I couldn't find it on my hard drive. So here today with me is one of my dearest friends, sister friends in the whole wide world. I'm talking about the Paranormal Research and Resource Society founder. She's the CEO and president of everything, pretty much. I mean, she pretty much can do it all. And she's one of my bestest, dearest friends. And she goes all around the country sharing with people the truth about the paranormal. Not what they want to hear, perhaps, but the truth of the matter. She's dedicated her entire life. This is really the best of the best today, friends. It's probably her 50,000th time on the show. We don't keep count anymore. We just love spending time together. Without further ado, let's bring her on. Let's welcome 22-time People's Choice Award nominee for Best Dramatic Female in a Paranormal Series, Miss Jenny Stewart. Welcome back, girlfriend.
Oh, thanks for having me. That was great hanging out with you.
I always try to work on you. I know you always look for a big intro and stuff, so I'll bring out the full band, 78 trombones and everything.
Awesome. This is the best. It's always the best.
Always, always fun. Well, welcome back. You know, today a lot of people always come to you and they always ask us about, you know, places to go, haunted locations, paranormally active locations. But before we kind of get into that, I'd like to take just maybe a little bit of a 5 minutes to educate some people before they go, because some people will hear the show and they will want to go to these places, and some of them may be rather uneducated about the do's and don'ts. What do you think is the most important thing people remember before they just go to an active paranormal playground, as you call them?
Well, if you're not feeling 100%, like you're under the weather, or you're on any kind of like really strong medication that maybe alters, you know, your perception, don't go investigating. You know, there'll always be other times, but, you know, don't go if you're not feeling good, because you're really setting yourself up to go into a very active location and get hurt, you know, or
mm-hmm.
bring something home with you.
Mm-hmm. And you've dealt with attachments, and they're not pretty, and they're not very easy always to get away. In fact, you were featured in The Haunted, which we were talking about before we went live, which, you know, really detailed a family struggle of what happens when you go into such a paranormally active place, and you are kind of uneducated to – a lot of people want to see ghosts and stuff, but I think a lot of people, they really don't think they're going to experience anything, and then they go, and then whoops, those ghosts go home with them sometimes, and that's not always a good thing. And sometimes they don't leave very easily either.
No, they don't. Sometimes I'm still working a case that, 5 years in, but they're still, you know, they've still got things going on in their house. And, you know, it's for not only them actually, you know, going to an investigation and something following them home, but they actually brought items home with them. And that's another thing, you know, when you investigate, don't ever remove anything from the property, ever.
Unless
ever
you're a member of the Warren family.
unless you know, you plan on sending it, you know, don't have a secret tell you. Don't send it, you know, don't go looking for, you know, things to send, you know, it's because it can be dangerous. It really can be. I know we had dealt with some investigators in the past that, you know, had done, like to the, you know, Henrington with us, Henrington investigation, that had found, you know, souvenirs, as they said, from Henrington. And it's like, no, you do not take that stuff home with you, period.
Right. And that's really good advice, because some people think, well, let's just see what this is worth, or let's see what happens.
Yeah.
And so, you know, people sometimes they'll say, it'll never happen to me until it does. Right. And then it does. And then it really, really does. And you've had some really hard cases and things that we've talked about mutually with different clients and friends that have had ordeals. Friends, if you're listening to us, if you've just now joined us, you're listening to, I'm your host, Christopher Reburn, with my dear friend, Jenny Stewart. We're talking about haunted locations here in America. And in a future show, we'll do an international version to focus on places that, you know, that are overseas in other parts of the world. Those of you that are on my Facebook and Jenny's Facebook and the blog talk, there was a picture that we used for the promoting of this particular show. And it was a hospital that is very, very close to your heart. It's not in existence anymore. But bring us back to Henrington and how that changed your life and changed your belief. It changed everything, really, for you to be in such an active environment. How does Henrington still, what does it still mean to you today?
Oh, God, I think I still have, even though the building's gone, I think the energy there, I'm still, like, really deeply connected to it in a lot of ways. Just when people say that name or they talk about, you know, the energy that was there, I get really choked up. I still do. It was an African-American TB hospital that was opened in 1923. And, you know, around the country at that time, you know, TB was very, very, you know, it was an epidemic. It was very widespread. And they did open a lot of, you know, buildings that were segregated. But what was so different about this one, it was originally called the Maryland Tuberculosis Asylum Colored Branch. And what was different is because it was segregated away from the, you know, the main Maryland TB hospital. It was put in the woods. It was in an area where they were very isolated. And, you know, a lot of people didn't really question that because they were, you know, fearful of TB, so they wanted them to be isolated. But it was in an area where, you know, it was very difficult for family members to actually come and visit or check up on their loved ones or anything like that. So a lot of times what happened was the patients would be dropped off and that would be it. They would never, you know, the families would never see them again, talk to them, because they couldn't come back out there because they had to come by train 9 times out of 10 and they didn't have the money.
Mm. Right.
And during we did a 6-month, very in-depth investigation there. Digging through medical journals and different documents, we discovered that the patients in that hospital was actually established to utilize it, the patients, basically as guinea pigs. And that was one of the very first things I heard when I went into Henrington.
Yeah.
An African-American male said we were used as guinea pigs to find a cure for the white folk. And in essence, that's what it was. And one of the doctors that found the, in a joke, the later, you know, the antibiotic that treats TB, actually was a resident at Henrington. And so it kind of all makes full circle. But I think that for Henrington, me opening up as a medium, I think, missed of all that. And then, you know, having the attachments and, you know, because I had done Waverly Hills. I mean, I had done it for years. You know, I'd already done that and experienced the TB, you know, hospital per se.
Yeah.
There was something about Henrington that just really kicked my butt. And
still there today.
You know, it was,
and still with you today.
Even today. Yeah. I mean, even today, I tell people it was probably one of the most compelling, next to the haunted case, it was the most compelling, you know, case in my career. And ultimately, the haunted episode stemmed from Henrington. So it all kind of played full circle.
It was a full circle moment as well. Mm-hmm. And it's something that that a lot of people still remember you for. And of course, whenever, you know, you're on Haunted, we always tune in and watch it for the millionth time with that famous eye roll of yours when they ask you, you know, what's your name and say it again. But,
it was 15th time I said my name. So
I know, right?
Know that.
It just kept going on and on. It was a long day and they kept asking the same questions and stuff, but it was so much fun to watch that. I want to talk about a place that took solitary confinement to a brand new level when it was built in the early 1800s. Prisoners lived alone. They exercised alone. They ate alone. When an inmate left his cell, a guard would cover his head with a hood so he couldn't see or be seen. The prison had to abandon its solitary system due to overcrowding from 1913 until it closed in 1970. Although the forms of punishment did not get any less severe, chaining an inmate's tongue to his wrists using that as one example. The site now welcomes thousands of visitors every year for both its museum and ghost tours. Reported happenings still include disembodied laughter, shadowy figures, pacing footsteps. I'm talking about Eastern State Penitentiary in Philadelphia. And you've been there, haven't you?
Only once. I've only experienced that one time, and I've always said I'm going to go back because, you know, it is a very, the energy there is very heavy. It's really, really heavy. And if you go in knowing, you know, the history, you know, the full history, and you walk in, it is really heavy, and it's incredible. And it's, I tell people, it's not a place that if you haven't, you know, become somewhat of a not a novice, but, you know, you've done some investigating. Don't go in there as a beginner if you plan on going in and actually doing a ghost investigation because, you know, you may, you know, really get traumatized at that place.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not the place that you should go for your first investigation ever.
No, not at all. And that's something I'm glad that you mentioned because I think there's a lot of people listening that want to go to some of these places. So if you're just now catching us, if you've missed the first few minutes, please go back and listen to the first few minutes of the show today because we gave some really good guidelines and pointers on what you should do before you go to these places. Built in 1796 by General David Bradford, this place is considered to be one of America's most haunted sites. The house is rumored to be on top of an Indian burial ground and is home to at least 12 different ghosts. Legends and ghost stories abound, including the tale of a former slave named Chloe, who had her ear chopped off by her master after she reportedly was caught eavesdropping. She got her revenge by poisoning a birthday cake and killing two of the master's daughters. But then she was hung by former slaves in the end. Chloe now reportedly wanders around this place wearing a turban to conceal her severed ear. I know this is one of your favorite places. We're talking about Myrtle's Plantation in Louisiana.
I've never been, though. It's one of my favorite places to research.
I know.
I've never been.
People talk about it all the time.
And a lot of the history of that location, believe it or not, has been misconstrued over the years. You know, you go and talk to the people that have, you know, resided in that area all their life. You know, we're talking generations of families. You know, they'll tell you that that's not how it happened. That's not the story.
Right.
Then you,
right.
You know, might talk to another family, but there is definitely something there. And I think in all locations where it is, you know, there is the historical documentation of several, you know, lots of several slaves, you know, lots of them being held prisoner in the location. And you had maybe a not so nice master, but, you know, but, you know, I had people that did his, you know, beckoning that would, you know, abuse these slaves and things like that. They're just real cruel. You find that there's that energy imprint that is still there because it is so traumatizing. It was so traumatizing to them. And I always say the more brutal, the more heavy, the more traumatic the, you know, the energy is that's imprinted, the longer it lingers. And so I think there, you have a lot of residual, you have a lot of, you know, activity, and it is definitely, you know, one of my places that's on my bucket list. Definitely.
We need to do it together, I think. We need to go there together. Road trip. Hashtag road trip.
There you go. We'll go experience it together.
There you go. I think so, too. I want to stop the show right now and send a big, big, big shout out to my friend Daryl in Nova Scotia, 4-year-old Daryl, who's listening to the show, who's so faithful to listen to every show. So, hey, Daryl, lots of love and keep fighting those ghosts. He's a big old Ghostbuster in Nova Scotia.
Aww.
I love spirits and energy. So we're hoping that he gets a big kick out of this shout out today. You know, is Myrtle's Plantation in Louisiana. I also want to talk a little about New Orleans because that's the times that I've been there have been very, very, very active. And I actually knew of somebody who knew the owner of the Delphine Lalaurie Mansion, which was somebody who, those are people that don't know, she had slaves. She had a beautiful mansion in the French Quarter, and it was rumored that she tortured slaves, and she kept them confined with dingling body parts and swapping genitalia from different slaves and doing all these weird surgeries. And, you know, there wasn't crazy stuff. And some of it could have been, you know, who knows what really did happen. But I went there. I also went to Marie Laveau's house. And I'm telling you, there's some very, very active places in New Orleans. And I'll never forget the first time I was there, the tour guide said, don't go down in this neighborhood after dark. So what do? You go down in the neighborhood after dark when someone tells you not to. And there were actual people practicing vampirism, if that's a word. So it's just, I think it's an awesome, what do you think about New Orleans, the city of the dead, the people that are still there that have been there for hundreds of years?
Well, you think about how they treat their, you know, their deceased. I mean, they walk down the middle of the street and, you know, the O-Time, you know, play the music. And it is a city that's very, very rich in, like, voodooism, different types of magic. So you go to a location that has a lot of doorways, a lot of portals, and that's a place which it would be, you know, New Orleans is that, because you have so many people that are practicing. And there it's an everyday, you know, it's a way of life. You can walk down one street and there'd be 15, you know, palm readers and psychic readers, and it's just very embraced there. And that's because that's so much of their heritage and their traditions and things. And so it is very, the places, the energy there is very different than any place else in the country. So it's,
I agree with you on that.
I think that the things that they do, the different rituals and things that are done there, I think is what draws the different energy in. I think it's why it feels so different.
I think so, too. I mean, when I was there, I felt like some of the energy was almost being constantly summoned, you know, just for certain people to experience. It's a beautiful city. But it's when I was there both three times, boy, it's certainly overwhelming, too. I mean, it's the first time it was like, oh, gosh, after I was there for an hour, I really had to lay down. I mean, I really did have to take
it's
a nap. It really does. It really does. The Battle of Gettysburg was one of the bloodiest in American history, with somewhere around 50,000 young men dying in a three-day conflict. And many of these soldiers never received a proper burial. And many believe the souls of these men now wander the field to look for their weapons and camaraderies. We're talking about the Gettysburg Battlefield in Pennsylvania. And a lot of people have visited there and have had really profound experiences. Some people have went and have had no experiences at all. What do you think about a place there like that, where there's like a massive war and a lot of deaths in a very quick period of time, and especially when they're not given proper burials, and how the dead really sometimes can't rest because of that? What is your thoughts about that in Gettysburg in general?
I was 30 minutes from there for like 5 years, and I've been to several events there. And I remember the first time I actually went to Gettysburg, the main road runs between the battlefield. You know, you have battlefield on each side of you, and I didn't realize where we were at. And the energy shift, I literally pulled the car over because the energy was so strong going through there. I almost took when I had a headache, it was just so strong. And we had went to this diner there in town, and John Baptist was with us, and we were talking outside, and we just were kind of walking around. And all of a sudden, I got really overwhelmed. I mean, very emotional. And I remember stopping where we were at. We were by this building, and I said, there's just some intense energy here. It's almost like forgotten energy. John turned around, and he goes, Jenny, this was the train station where they would load the bodies up for the trains to come through and get them. And it was really sad. It was sad that, you know, so many people had died there. And, you know, it's very sacred ground. And, you know, people that visit there really take it very seriously. You know, you go through and you watch some of the people become very emotional, like reading the different markers and things like that. And it's very, you know, I won't say that everybody's going to have an experience there, but I think that anybody that goes there with the right intentions, not to investigate or anything like that, but goes there just to pay homage and show their respect, you're going to feel the energy. You're going to feel it.
Yeah, I agree with you. I completely agree with you on that as well. And being so empathic as so many of us are, yes, of course, it's hard not to cry. It's hard not to be emotional when you feel so many people were so wrongly killed so abused. So it's very, very, very hard. For one of our last... we've still got about 10 minutes, so we'll do two or three more places and talk about. But right now, we're going to West Virginia. This place opened its doors to patients in 1864. And in the 1950s, this West Virginia facility reached its peak, housing more than 2,500 patients, even though it was only designed to hold 250. The overcrowding led to inhumane conditions, lack of heat, and convalescents kept in cages. Patients started acting increasingly violent, from starting fires to attacking staff members and the lot. The asylum finally closed its doors in 1994, but the souls of some of the patients are said to linger. Ghost tours are available for those wishing to see how some patients lived and died within the cramped halls of the Trans-Allegheny Lunatic Asylum in Weston, West Virginia. This is one of your favorite places. I know that.
Well, I pass it. You know, every time we come home, we go back and forth from Maryland to Indiana, back and forth. We pass that area. And, you know, it was always really creepy, you know, to do that. But, yeah, it is a very – I haven't been there in a long time, but it is probably one of my top 10 places to go. It is very active, very, very, very active. It's one of those places that no matter how many people come through there, you know, as tourists or doing investigations – it doesn't diminish the activity. I think it grows. I think it feeds it. But there is so much activity there. I mean, so much. And there's been a lot of TV shows that have actually done, like, their live events there on Halloween. And I actually participated in one back when, about 8 years ago. I actually was I can never think of a name. Brain aneurysm fart here. I was actually a consultant. I was available to consult because Christopher Fleming actually went in and was doing a spirit box session inside with the Ghost Adventures. And I was asked to be a consultant, actually, as far as, you know, the things that they were getting through the spirit box and, you know, any kind of questions or things that they had going on with it. So that was really cool. But
that's
no,
great.
It's a really cool place. I know that there's been a lot of changes in the last few years, and I think a lot of people have quit really talking about Trans-Allegheny because of the person that owns it is not not so nice sometimes.
Well, great. Well, that's always helpful.
Yeah.
That's always really helpful.
So even though it's one of my favorite places, it's one of the places I tell people that, you know, if you go and maybe take a tour of it with a historical tour, that's great.
Right.
But yeah, it's kind of hard anymore to get in as to do the investigation, from what I understand.
Yeah, well, and I've heard similar things in circles as well of that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there was a movie out recently about this place, starring Academy Award, Tony Award. I mean, she's won every award because she's wonderful. I'm talking about the beautiful Helen Mirren, and we're talking about the Winchester Mystery House. Might be one of the most disturbing construction projects in history. Following the death of her husband and child, Miss Sarah Winchester, wife of the rifle maker's son of Winchester Rifles, was informed by a seer, by a psychic, that her family was killed by the ghosts of those who died from the family, from her family's guns. That they, you know, they built the guns and the people died and the ghosts came back to haunt her. To keep away the vengeful spirit, she commissioned the Victorian funhouse turned macrame dwelling that you see today. And some of the creepier features include staircases that lead directly into the ceiling, doors that open into brick walls, and windows that can take you to secret passages. San Jose, California, Winchester Mystery House. I know you've heard of this place. Most all people have. What do you think about this place? I think there's so much there, and I think she's still there. I really do.
I think she became paranoid. I think that there was an act of haunting. I think there was something that was truly either attached to her or someone close to her, and I think that she became so paranoid because of attachment can cause paranoia. I think that she had such great paranoia, almost to the point of what we call maybe somewhat schizophrenia, you know, that she was trying to keep, she thought she did all this to keep the spirits away. I think she was trying to save herself, and I think out of that she created this really impressive, crazy house. I mean, you know, and one day I would love to be able to try to go through it. I mean, I would probably go mad myself trying to get through some of those, you know, doors things.
It
was impressive. If you think about it, especially in that era, how impressive it was for her to do what she did. I mean, it was really impressive.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I agree with you completely. And I agree. I think that she was paranoid and stuff. And there was just such a big house. When you have so many rooms and nothing to fill, you know, it kind of can be a little bit weird and stuff. But I think she was decent to, they said to her employees and stuff like that. So that's good. It's always nice when people are kind and things.
Yeah.
Those of you that are
scared.
Yeah, I think so too. And everybody that wants to see the movie, it was a decent movie. I mean, for what it was, I thought they did very, very well with that. I want to talk briefly about, we only have about 4 minutes, so this is going to have to be very brief, about the Amityville house. Mm-hmm. And I can't really, we're not going to have time to do, but I was a bad boy because we didn't live off it too far from that place. And me and a friend broke in one time. And, of course, this is well past the legal ramifications of breaking and entering. This was years and years and years ago. But it definitely was very frightening, and I definitely feel that that house is still very much active and alive. What do you think about that place?
You know, you have different owners that go in there and claim it, that you don't have any, you know, there's nothing. I mean, there's people that look even at the Haunted in Connecticut house, they say the same thing. I think it's like our house in Maryland. I think it lays dormant until the right family moves in, and then it looks for those weaknesses, and it starts to attack those weaknesses, but I don't think it's going to be haunted for every single person that lives there.
I agree. And I think and some people wonder, well, why do some people have it and some people don't? I think it's being open and being accessible to that. And, you know, right? I mean, just being open to it.
And having weak spots. The negative look for those outlets, like whether they're having depression, you know, and there was a lot of that in that family. You know, they had a lot of different things going on. And evil entities look for that. And I think that's what that house holds, is something evil. And I think it looks for a family that carries a lot of weaknesses and loopholes that it can, you know, punch through and start to, you know, isolate people and things like that. And I think that if you have a family that's not experiencing it, then they don't, you know, they have a
good
little bit
for them. They
life
can be peaceful. Thank God.
Yeah. It's still there. It's just dormant. It's kind of like hibernating.
Right, exactly. I think so too. And more when we have more time, I'll definitely share more about that experience of committing breaking and entering when I was about 8 years old or so. But those of you that have listened to the show today, please be sure to, if you arrive late, please be sure to catch the archive bit about, we went right into it at the beginning of the show to talk about that, the do's and don'ts of paranormal investigating, because we both have had some really, you know, very, it's not annoying or it is kind of annoying and aggravating, especially when somebody deliberately goes and does things and uneducated and they know. But I think it really is, it beats down to the people think, well, it's never going to happen to me until it does, right?
Exactly. Yeah,
kind of?
I agree.
Yeah,
people don't believe it. Like, oh, it's not real. Or some people have that mindset of, maybe there is paranormal, but I don't know. I don't think it really exists. And then when they get their butt kicked or something happens, then they're like, oh, it's too late. Yeah.
That's so true. And I think that I'm glad we did this show today, because the listeners have requested that we talk about some of these places and stuff and a lot more, but we'll have to do a part two.
We didn't even hit all of them.
Are you kidding? We had many, but we'll definitely do a part two of Most Haunted Locations Live again later this year. And we'll do an international version at some point as well, when Jenny and I have time to get together and go over some international haunted locations to speak about and stuff like that. So we'll definitely keep this going, and this is the first time we've done a show this year. It certainly won't be the last, but it's always such an honor and thrill to be with you and a fellow People's Choice Award nominee.
I love you, PB.
I'm going to have to get you one of those made now, you know. You can make some awards and stuff to give you one now. But thank you for always coming back and spending time with me. I love you with all my heart.
I love you too. It's always a pleasure, and I love being with you and Sharon. You know, these crazy stories. So, great being here.
And they are crazy, some of them, but they're real and they're honest, and that's what we do. We're truth seekers, truth tellers, and not everybody's going to understand us or get us, but that's fine, because there's plenty of people, respectful, good people, who do, thankfully.
Amen.
So that's the people we're talking to today. But as always, thank you for joining us, Jenny, and thank you to all of our listeners who always come out in big numbers whenever we're together. Thank you for listening, and thank you to Daryl and everybody for being huge fans and supporters of our show. And thank you again for making it awesome today, Jenny. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.
And as always, friends, take care of each other. And we're going to be back together again real, real soon. And I have a wonderful guest coming on next week to talk about her gastric bypass surgery. We're going to have lots of more fun stuff coming up. Thank you, everyone. I love you. Reburn.org for more information about me. A big hug. Thanks a lot, everyone. Bye for now.